some of the research I've been doing is I'm using hemp and hemp byproducts to as a as a, as as an ingredient in order to see how it helps, improve the nutrient utilizations in the complete feed, how it helps to, help the gut health, for instance. And I'm looking at that at three different production types: indoors, outdoors, and also in the floor pens. And so trying to see what are the interactions across three different production types and how can we formulate diets to optimize the production of those production types as well.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at Kemin.com/AG. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Welcome to the Feed Science Podcast brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Carlos Campabadal from Kansas State University, being the host of this podcast and dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussion in the feed science industry. So please get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. So today, our guest, I'm very happy here to introduce Dr. Ayodeji Aderebibre, and I apologize if I mispronounced that, but we're very happy to have him here in this podcast to know a lot about what he does and a little bit of his background. So welcome to the Feed Science Podcast, Ayodeji. So please just to start off, and for our audience, if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and everything that you do there at Florida Agriculture and Mechanics University.
Thank you, Carlos, for having me. I'm very, very glad to be here. Once again, my name is Dr. Ayodeji Aderebigbe. I'm an assistant professor of animal science at Florida A&M University. This is about my second going to third year in this position. And before that, I did a postdoc in poultry nutrition at Auburn University for a while. And then I did my PhD at Purdue University in monogastric nutrition as well. And so what I do right now in Florida A&M is similar to what I've been doing, which is nutrition, poultry and swine specifically. Sometimes I tend to add some ruminant work if I need to, but I try to keep it within monogastrics. And so, we have a 50-50 split of teaching and research, and I try to use some of my research hours also for extension, because I think it's very important as well. Try to see what is going on in the field and try to create some targeted solutions for the farmers as well.
Well, this is great, and thank you very much for this information and introduction. Of course, I have a heart for a fellow Purdue alumni here too, and then of course an extension and using research to help extension. I do believe a little bit that's the key, especially like you said, to help solve problems for the farmers I'm pretty sure not only in Florida, I mean all over where you work. And especially when you said that your background is monogastric, but you also work in ruminants, and that takes some unique capabilities and skill sets. So based on that, can you tell us a little bit about your research work and your teaching work? So kind of get a little bit more of the feeling of what you're looking into right now.
Okay, thank you. So in terms of my teaching, I actually, again, I have 50% teaching, so it's a big of a teaching load. So I teach swine sciences, I teach feeds and feeding, teach incubation and brooding. And then, sometimes I teach the genetics of domestic animals as a side teaching load as well. And so in terms of my research, again, it's nutrition. I've tried to use nutrition as a tool to help some of the challenges the farmers are facing in terms of stress. So I have to look at nutrient-stress interactions and stress, specifically for Florida, for instance, we have a lot of yeast stress, and so try to use that as a tool. And then also some disease challenge as well. And more recently, I've been more interested in some protein-fiber interaction. And so some of the research I've been doing is I'm using hemp and hemp byproducts to as an ingredient in order to see how it helps, improve the nutrient utilizations in the complete feed, how it helps to, help the gut health, for instance. And I'm looking at that at three different production types: indoors, outdoors, and also in the floor pens. And so trying to see what are the interactions across three different production types and how can we formulate diets to optimize the production of those production types as well.
Wow. So a lot of things, you know, and very heavy teaching loads. I'm pretty sure you're putting a lot of work on a weekly basis. And I particularly appreciate that a lot and see admire people that do that effort. So, you know, very interesting what you said. Two things that caught my mind. First of all, hemp, you know, and I relate that a little bit in Kansas, that it has been a little bit of production, not necessarily as a feed ingredient, more for other industrial products. But first thing, let's talk about hemp a little bit, and then something that triggers that is especially used worldwide. I mean, a little bit of what you call hybrid production. I mean, indoors, outdoors, and a mixture of it. So let's start talking a little bit about hemp. Tell us a little bit what do you see there in terms of hemp, whatever have you seen before? I'm pretty sure that our audience worldwide will be interested in that.
Yeah, thank you. So when I say hemp, I'm not talking about cannabis. I'm talking about the industrial hemp.
Very important.
the one with the low THC content. I think it's the industrial hemp has by about 0.3% THC, and so it can be used for animals. And one of the things that I, you know, preliminary studies that I've seen is that, you know, it has, compared to soybean meal, it has very good protein profile as well, amino acid profile. And also the fiber concentration also is very important in the way it's been digested. So in terms of the soluble versus insoluble fiber. And so we see a lot of comparability to soybean. And because it's widely used again in the South here, we wanted to see what that looks like, you know, when you feed it to chickens across three different production systems. And also with swine as well. I'm currently conducting a trial with swine, trying to look at the, and when I say swine, I mean swines that are raised outdoors, trying to look at how the, you know, feeding of hemp with some feed additives like probiotics helps to regulate turbo stress in those pigs.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So we're trying to look at that, in for instance. You know, one of the preliminary results that we've been seeing is that they are able to handle it better than even the soybean, the corn soybean diets. And especially when it comes to the waste products, okay, we have less smell. I'll call it smell in this for this podcast. So we have less smell. I don't know why that is. But you know, I stumbled on that by mistake from my student that came to me and said, "Oh, do you notice that the smell of this poop smells different?" And so we are trying to do some follow-up studies in that, looking at, you know, some of the volatile compounds in the poop and how that can relate to nutrient recycling and nutrient waste management. And so there's a lot of moving parts in the use of this hemp product, but it's still an ongoing research, and we are hoping to find more value for that.
Wow. Yeah. Very good information. And for our audience, please comment at any point if you have any questions, and we're pretty sure that we could get them to Dr. Ayo to answer them properly. So going a little bit there for the hemp. So you're substituting hemp for a portion of the soybean meal percentage, I'm assuming there.
Yeah,
you will consider hemp as an alternative ingredient, correct? Will that be the right term for it, or what will be the label that people will see them in the industry as it moves along through the supply?
Yeah, I think the industry is trying to, you know, save costs, right? We're trying to bring down the cost of a feed, so we're trying to look at alternative or, you know, substitute for soybean meal at some portion. And so for these studies, we're trying to replace soybean at around 20 to 25% with hemp. And so it's going to be, you know, an alternative feed ingredient substituting for a portion of soybean meal. And as the trial goes, we'll see how we can maybe fully replace soybean meal. Again, soybean meal is still a gold standard. We are not trying to take that away. But in terms of sustainability, we are trying to, and again, this hemp that I'm using is the byproduct. It's not the seed meal itself, because the seed meal is very expensive. So it's the hemp hard fines that has some portion of fiber, some portion of protein. And so it's a good balance of protein and fiber interactions going on in there. And so we're trying to look at what is going on in the gut, what is going on in the performance, what is going on in the poop, what is going on in the welfare. I have cameras set up. I tell my students all the time, I want to see if these animals will dance, you know, because we're feeding them hemp anyways, you know. So, and again, we've been seeing some interesting results with the pigs, not with the chickens. In terms of their behavior, there's some slight alcohol docility in the pigs. So they're more calm in the pigs that are fed some hemp. So we're trying to, you know, take that a step further to see how we can understand what is going on in there and then try to optimize the production.
So will that hemp be in the byproduct? Will that be maybe properly called hemp meal or something around those lines? Or they haven't probably the industry come up with a term for it, I'm assuming.
It's called, well, currently it's called the hemp heart fines.
Okay.
Hemp heart fines, but we can also call it just the hemp meal.
Yeah,
it's a byproduct that is usually thrown away, so it's least cost. And you know, that's one of the things I try to do is whatever feed ingredient or feed additive or alternative feedstock you're using has to bring down price, not increase it. Ultimately, you want the farmers to be able to adapt it, and so this one is very cheap. But it also has a lot of protein, a lot of amino acids, and it also has a lot of polyphenols as well, a lot of all these bioactive compounds that can also have this double effect of not just the nutrition, but also help to modulate the gut's microbiota and the gut health of the animals as well. So you are getting a dual effect of feed additive and also the feed stuff as well.
Very interesting. And for our audience, please like us. Give us, please, the famous thumbs up for this great podcast. And just going back, so is there any other alternative ingredient that you're looking for or that you are thinking of working in the future? Kind of thinking those same lines of least cost formulation, something like hemp and those in a way, you know, that maybe you could share some information about that.
Yeah, I'm looking at a couple. I've done some in vitro work with oat hulls, which is the fiber portion of the oats. I'm actually trying to collaborate with Dr. From Auburn University. His name just went off my head right now. So I have a collaborator there, and we're trying to see how, because the oat husk has a lot of insoluble fiber, which is
okay.
Useless. But the good thing about it is that it can modulate the gut microbiota if you use it well. And so we're trying to see how to use some feed processing technique, like microwave technology, autoclaving, to open up the cage structure of those fiber such that you can improve the fermentability of the fiber, but not increase the solubility of that fiber. So try and find a good balance in between such that the microbes can ferment it, but then you don't have this viscosity problem. And so I've done some autoclaving work at different temperature, at different pressure, to find a sweet spot that can, you know, help to improve this good microbiota in the gut. And then this is going to be the next stage of that experiment, whereby we test it on the field, especially with the hybrid systems now. You know, I work with a lot of farmers that have some of these hybrid indoor-outdoor systems. And so one of the problems that they have is that, you know, you have the indoor, which is controlled, and you have the outdoors, which is not controlled. So you have this shift in, microbial, populations, because they have this microbial population indoors, different from the one outdoors. And so trying to find a way to help them with dietary interventions to really improve their gut health.
And this is a great thing. And maybe a lot of people in our audience might never think about, you know, pigs or chickens on outdoors. And some people just think about them as outdoors, not indoors, depending where you're in the world. But let's talk a little bit more about that, about your work and everything that you see on the hybrid production. So maybe our audience can learn a little about that, pros and cons and the different things that you're seeing out there, especially here in the United States. I mean, of course, not the same having an outdoor chicken in you know, North Dakota, Minnesota in the winter compared to Florida. We understand that weather-wise, but just learn about, especially for those places that, that may have some benefits utilizing this type of production systems.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, again, I do, you know, some of the indoor work, a lot of the indoor work, but I also have a lot of farmers in the Florida here, or not Florida, like I call it, which spans some southern part of Georgia as well, that deal specifically just with the niche, I call it the niche market, which is the niche production, like the outdoors or the hybrid systems. And so I'm interested in working with farmers, so I try to go out there to see what they're doing, what their challenges are. And of course, one of the challenges with that is because these birds or these animals have access to the outdoors, there's a problem with protein quality, okay? And because they are feeding on forages, and so there's some dilution of protein quality going on in there, you know, and there's also, you know, nutrient stability, you know, in the feed because they have access to the outdoors. There's gut health. Gut health is a big one, you know, because now they have access to the soil, they have access to the pathogens. I've done some work with some farmers where we try to, you know, feed some feed additives, you know, at different time points, for different lengths of time, to see how that helps modulate, you know, the gut microbiota to fight some of the diseases that are faced on a daily basis, which, you know, sometimes can be very detrimental to the farmers. You know, they are small scale farmers, and sometimes they lose a lot of their flock just like that, you know. But, you know, helping to build up that immunity, that gut immunity, is very important. So you have the protein quality, which is a problem because of the forage dilution, you have the nutrient stability, you have the gut health, and then you also have the energy balance, which is also a challenge because outdoor birds have more, they expend more energy because they move around a lot. Okay, and so try to formulate diets, you need to be aware of the energy levels of those animals and also be aware of the thermal stress that they face. And so they need a lot of maybe fat sources, unsaturated fat sources that have low thermic effects. You know, so these are some of the things that you need to start thinking about, you know, that are specific to hybrid or outdoor systems that you don't have those problems in the indoor, more controlled, intensive production systems.
Great. No, this is good information for our audience. Please share the video if you learned something new today. So just going back to this conversation, and this is very, very interesting overall, I see that you're mentioning that feed additives play a key role, especially for that hybrid system. And their role, of course, will be more supporting animal health and other things too. But if I'm a feed miller, which I usually put in my hat as a feed miller, not a nutritionist, which I'm not, how do I know, how does that feed mill needs to think about or work with that nutritionist to be sure that you're making the right feed for outdoors, indoors, or hybrid? Because, I mean, I'm pretty sure that some of those could be in that. How can they all work together? And what would the key things that you will see that a nutritionist and a feed mill need to pay attention when formulating for all these scenarios?
So you're right. So, you know, one of the things that I think can help in terms of getting the feed miller and the nutritionist on the same page is in terms of the delivery of this feed additives, you know. And I'm going to say it in two ways. You know, the first way is one of the things that I try to do is to change the, you know, the way the feed additives are supplied to the birds, for instance, in terms of the modes of supply, in feed versus in water, for instance, two different ways. And we've been able to see that, at least for the hybrid systems, we get more responses from the birds when they are supplied in water, not in feed, because we have the problem with the stability of the feed additives. So for instance, I bought a feed, you know, I formulated a diet, I had some probiotics in the diet and the feed, and then I kept it, you know, in the farm with the farmers for a while. And then after a while, I decided to do some analysis on that same feed, and I realized that a lot of those feed additives have already left the feed. And so this stability is a big challenge, and then I decided to, you know, supply it in water, and I saw that we have a good, you know, consistent effect. And so the route of administration is one big challenge. Another thing is we can look at, you know, the time effects, okay, in terms of, you know, face feeding. Okay, when do we actually want to supply this feed? Do you want to supply this additive early on? Do you want to supply close to processing, for instance? And also in terms of the processing itself, as a feed miller, you know, pelleting is an option, crumbling is an option, you know, mash is an option. So trying to find the right form of the feed as well. I'm not a feed miller, so, but I try to see, you know, how do we supply what we say we want to supply, you know, because one thing is we have the feed mixed, but does it contain all the things that we want it to supply to the birds? Okay, and in my experience, those are two different things.
Uh-huh. Oh, we'll get it with that. Yeah.
Yeah, what it contains when you formulate, and what is supplying to the birds.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100% with that. Yeah.
So we have to find some way to make sure that what we formulate is what is supplied. And it can, you know, it can be part of the, you know, terms of the particle size analysis and you know so, all sort of things that come into that mix.
Addition of the ingredients, precision of the scales. I mean, it's And that takes a toll. And I see that from a feed mill perspective, an operation, and a lot of my work is that. I mean, if I always joke, oh, nutritionists, they go very little. I want this percent, then. But how do you spread that in a batch when you're mixing?
And it's a big challenge. Yeah, it's a big challenge. And you know, one of the grants that I just got is, you know, to train small and medium scale farmers how to do 2-3 ingredient feed formulation. Yeah, so, you know, I'm going to recruit, you know, 10-20 farmers and train them how to do their own on-farm feed formulation. And one of the challenges I'm facing right now is to convince them that they don't need to buy the very expensive commercial feed, and they can make, you know, because I've done it. I've done a pilot trial with that. I compared the commercial feed with a very low-cost feed formulated by, you know, just 2-3 ingredients. And I see comparable, sometimes better performance from the formulated diet, you know, to the very expensive feed that is bought, you know. And so, you know, that is something that I'm looking at in working with the local feed mill and trying to make the farmers have access to these, you know, these resources such that they can formulate their own feed themselves. And also because you have this hybrid system whereby you have changes in nutrient composition because they have access to forages, you know, they can feed, you know, the seasonal variations. And so they need to keep formulating feed, you know, to adjust to those seasonal variations and variability in nutrient composition and in the nutrient intake. And so those are some of the things that I'm looking at to do.
And I think that's a great project. I mean, I see it here in some places that you have outdoor pigs and you grow your own grain. You know, maybe you produce a little bit of full fat soybean because of the soybean you produce, or you buy it and then you mix your own, and maybe you get a premix package and you just blend it.
Yeah, blend it together.
And I see here in the States and other places, and that's very interesting. I'm definitely very to once you get that project going and finish, I will be very curious to see results of that. And I think that's a great thing, and it fits very well in extension overall.
Yeah, it's extension. I like extension too.
I think it's the key to be a good scientist. Also, it's very important, but also transmitting that information to real applications is the key.
It's very important. Yeah,
and that gives us a lot, of course, of good information, and of course, for our audience. Please visit our website, wisenetics.com. Learn more about all the other podcasts that we have on poultry, swine, dairy, beef, and, of course, pet food. And of course, don't forget about ours here, the Feed Science Podcast, that we always have great guests here. So as time is coming, I think it's very important to kind of – two things I want to ask you. How those feed millers can collaborate with producers, and based on everything you've been talking about, to make more, be more flexible and sustainable overall, just focusing on having better feed solutions. I mean, at the end of the day, when you think about it, we're all trying to make money, reduce waste, you know, be more sustainable. You never know what could happen in many aspects of what's going on in the world. So what are your suggestions or your thinking about that overall, that comment?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I think one of the things in terms of sustainability is we need feed millers to incorporate more, you know, local feed ingredients or alternative feed ingredients into their formulations as well. Again, I know corn and bean meal is the gold standard, but we have a lot of this. It's like a, it's, you know, the local feed ingredients or the alternative feedstuff are, you know, ingredients that have not really been fully explored. They're underexplored. And many times, you know, the feed mill don't want to incorporate that. And I understand into their milling processes, but we need more incorporation of that into these diet formulations, you know, to because it looks like we have plateau with the corn bean meal, you know, but there's a lot of opportunities in, and that's what I'm saying in my research. There's a lot of opportunities that we are overlooking with a lot of this alternative feedstuff. Grape pumice is one of these feed ingredients that I'm working with right now, muscadine grape pumice, and it's giving us some crazy results. I don't know what, if it's because of the variety of the grape pumice, which is muscadine. We have a viticulture center. That's what they do. That's the only thing they do here, research on muscadine grapes. And so we just get the grape pumice, we grind it, we lyophilize it, and we grind it, and we incorporate it in the diet. And we are seeing some, not in performance side, but we are seeing a lot of effects on the gut health, on the, you know, serum parameters, on the microbiota. And so I think there's a lot of opportunities. And, you know, looking forward, I would like to see a lot of this incorporation in the milling process from a lot of these alternative feeds on a large scale, but I know it's going to take some time.
It's time for our famous three.
And as we are wrapping up this podcast, quick questions. We always like to ask our guests, if somebody wants to learn a bit more about something like you, what you were talking today, hybrid productions or alternative ingredients, what resource would you suggest our audience to look, search, a book, website, technical bulletin, extension work, whatever that you recommend them to look into it?
You know, for me, I just, you know, one of the great resources that I look out for is this podcast. One of the things that I look out for is this podcast. You know, you have a lot of, I was looking at some of the past videos. I was like, this is a lot of information that cut across different areas. And that's one. Of course, there's local extension articles and publication as well that you should get, you know, access to. And so you can look for some of those as well. And also some YouTube videos. We have a lot of more podcasts popping up and some resources over there as well that I try to look up to.
Great. And besides your line of work, any other book or resources that you like to kind of sound a little bit, you know, funny, but like inspiration or just to keep you thinking about your career, what do you recommend somebody to learn into that? I mean, to look into it.
Well, I'm a handsome kind of person. I like to do some handsome farming as well. So even if it's just a small scale, you know, backyard farming, I like to try out my hands. And I think I, you know, for me as a researcher, that's a research mind. Again, I feed off from what I see on the field. And so, you know, just try to do something on a small scale or get involved volunteering, be out there, you know, try to interact with people, you know, take a walk, you know, I do that a lot as well. And so, you know, that's just try to go out there. I try not to lock myself in the office or in the lab.
Absolutely.
Just as I can, yeah.
And that kind of, in a way, answers a little bit the next question that I was going to ask you on what can help a young professional or a student, some of your students, to have a successful career. I think some of what you said applies, but if you have anything to add, what do you will tell as a guidance to somebody trying to grow your career?
Oh, you need to collaborate. You need to collaborate. You need to network. You can't be an island. You can't know it all. You know, there are many things that, you know, and you ask questions. You know, I like to ask questions. You know, I don't mind asking questions for my students. I've gained a lot of insight from my students, believe it or not, you know.
Really, I agree with that.
Yeah, and many times they, you know, yesterday we had a feed meal trying to make a feed and I was struggling with something and my student just gave me an idea. I was like, oh, okay, you see, you can be right too. So it's always good to ask questions. It's always good to collaborate and network. Because, you know, again, what we have in animal science or animal nutrition, animal production now, the challenges that we're facing need concerted efforts, you know, multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary efforts. And so we need to bring different specializations together to sit at a desk, to think. You're a feed miller, I'm a nutritionist, and we have to be able to think across different areas to be able to meet, you know, provide solution to a problem. And so I think the only way we can do that is if we go out there, meet people, you know, talk to the farmers, use that as a feedback to our own design, and also to collaborate with, you know, peers and, you know, and colleagues in that discipline as well.
And this is great tips. I'm pretty sure that these recommendations will follow very well by our audience. You said to collaboration network, and I heard that a couple of times, and I think absolutely right. And I think that can change. Yeah. Many people will think the same on that of growing your career, because we don't know it all.
Yeah.
And that's important to always learn.
Yeah.
So this is great. Thank you very much. We have here today Dr. Ayodeji Aderbibe. And thank you very much for your great insights and for this time. And I'm pretty sure that the audience also will enjoy it a lot. So with that, this concludes another episode of the Feed Science Podcast presented by WiseNetics. Thank you very much for our audience for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated for future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is very valuable for us. Until next time, this is Carlos Campabadal from the Feed Science Podcast signing off.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.